Hi there, I'm Jason Shulman, and this is New Books in Australian and New Zealand Studies. My guest today is Prudence Black. She's a research associate in the Department of Gender and Cultural Studies at the University of Sydney. She's here to talk about her new book, Smile, Particularly in Bad Weather, The Era of the Australian Airline Hostess, published in April 2017 by the University of Western Australia Press. Prue, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jason.
Well, it's great to have you. So, Prue, the airline hostess, how did you get interested in the topic?
I'd actually, I'd been teaching in fashion and design, and I did a PhD around the design history of the Qantas flight attendant uniform. So it was very much a design history of the uniform. But in doing the research for that book, I started, naturally enough, talking to flight attendants and flight hostesses. And I thought, wow, these women are pretty interesting, the stories they have to tell, not just about their time flying, but just the development of the profession, which, you know, started in the 1930s. So it was more like an opportunity to sit in their lounge rooms once again and chat to them, because they're interesting women to talk to. So, yeah, I wanted to sort of write that history of the profession.
So the profession started in the 1930s. What was being an airline hostess like at the very beginning?
It's interesting because the way it's portrayed was always like this was the most glamorous job in the world, but it was a very tough job, because if you go back to the 1930s, they were flying planes that weren't pressurized, so that meant they had to fly below 10,000 feet, which meant you cop a fair bit of weather in that sort of altitude. So you tossed about the skies. The planes, you know, it's not as if they did have heaters, but they were actually pretty cold. And in the early days, the air hostesses would, you know, wrap the passengers' feet in newspapers and try and keep them warm. They had thermoses of tea or coffee. It was very, very basic flying. So it seemed to be glamorous, but it was actually very hard work. And also the planes, you know, a few of them went down too. So it was a tough job. But I think it was exciting, because there was nothing quite like it. You know, if you imagine the opportunities for women in the 1930s, the sorts of jobs they could do, were very limited. So an air hostess did seem to be an opportunity that was literally out of this world. Yeah,
that's right. When I fly, I usually want it to be over as soon as possible, so I don't, you know, sort of have my thinking cap on. But, you know, if I step back, you know, the airplane is really sort of a gendered space, at least historically, right?
Yeah, well, I think this is exactly the point. So certainly the air hostesses came on board, and certainly in Australia they were called the air hostess, and they were to take on that very gendered role of being a hostess. And I think they used women because there was this idea that actually if a woman is brave enough to come on board, then it must be safe. So the woman was kind of this token presence in a way. That meant to indicate, yeah, well, yeah, they're there, so it must be okay. So, yeah, so from a very early period, it was gender, but men were on board planes too. So even though the first air crew were women, for example, Qantas in 1938 employed stewards, as they were called, and they were flying boats, and they needed kind of healthy young blokes who could help actually, you know, row the boats from the flying boats, the passengers out, and so they were often recruited from surf clubs around Sydney. So these were the merchant navy. So they were kind of knockabout blokes, and they were quite different to that idea of what the hostess was. You know, she was meant to be a kind of a polite young woman who would, you know, point out, you know, what was going down, but down below as you're flying. So so there were always sort of men on and women on board, but the balance was often quite different. Yeah.
The late 1930s, early 1940s saw some, you know, professionalization of the airline hostess role. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And who was Hazel Holliman?
Yeah, well, Hazel Holliman was a key figure in the airline industry. In fact, it was her family's airline, or her husband's family airline, who set up Holliman Airways, and they were the first airline to employ air hostesses in Australia. And she was never a matron. They always called her matron, but she kind of cut a long story short, she ended up training air hostesses for Hollyman's, which became Australian National Airways. But she'd travelled to America and the to England and I think probably Holland to actually get a sense of what was happening there, because air hostessing had started, or stewardessing or whatever, had started in the 1930s in America. So they were a little bit of ahead of us. So she went and saw what they were doing, and she realised that these young women that they were employing, you know, had to be trained. It wasn't just a job where you just came on board and you smiled and served tea and coffee. There were safety procedures, but there were also things like they were groomed, you know, they had to have a uniform. But Matron was, she was a key figure, and she stayed working with the airlines for many, many years, and the air hostesses regarded her very fondly and also respected that discipline that she instilled in them, because I think most of us will look at flight crew and we do rely on them, particularly in times where safety seems to be a bigger issue. It is the crew that are going to save you. So I think from very early on they knew that these women had to be trained properly. They had to be certain types, very kind of the idea of them being glamorous and good looking, which is a stereotype, I think, around them. They actually had to be fairly mature, because the other thing, they employed young women. They were usually only about 21. And so they had a maturity, or they were trained to have a maturity way beyond their actual years. They had to be very independent. You know, they had to leave their families. They were away a lot overnight, staying in hotel rooms by themselves. So it's a little bit hard to imagine it now, because now young people are much more independent. But in the 1930s, 40s and 50s, to be an independent young woman living away from your family was actually a fairly unusual thing.
And until the 1970s, the airlines really only recruited single women, is that right?
Yeah, this lasted for a very long time, and totally discriminatory when it goes through to a later period, it becomes an industrial issue. But there was this sense, because the airlines demanded, and this job demanded a lot of you, there was a sense that, you know, it wasn't a job for married women. These single women had to be able to drop everything at the drop of a hat and be at an airline. You know, especially if you're on Qantas and you're flying international flights, you'd be away for weeks at a time. So these were young women who were asked to put a lot of things, you know, like family and friends in the back burners. And as I say, for a lot of women, this was a job that gave them an opportunity to have an independence that was not typical of that period. Like, a lot of young women would be, you know, teachers or secretaries or whatever. They would be in a job that didn't give them the freedom, certainly, to travel in the way that the air hostess was able to do. So,
What happened when airline hostesses were introduced into international flights in the late 1940s?
Well, this was Qantas that... Oh, actually, this is not strictly true, actually. British Commonwealth Pacific Airways also flew from Australia up into Canada, so there were those international routes too. But it was Qantas, you know, our international airline that employed the flight hostesses in 1947, and they started flying in 48. And that was interesting, going back to the gendered question, because they already had the flight stewards, and within a year of the flight hostesses coming on board, the flight stewards went on strike, because they said, these birds, and this is how they referred to them, are stealing our glory, meaning we know how to do this job, we've been doing it for 10 years, why are these women coming on board? And once again, the issue here was that the stewards were doing the cooking and the drinks delivery, and the flight hostess was meant to do the practique, which is all the paperwork, and, you know, basically kind of act the role of the hostess of making sure people were comfortable, and they would do some of those jobs, but essentially that was the stewards doing that. So that gender division within the actual craft actually created tensions from the onset, and for the most part it worked all right until the 1980s, when the women in particular thought they were being discriminated because men were getting quite different promotional opportunities, salaries, and this history of what was happening too was actually happening across the world. So where the air hostesses in Australia was suddenly thinking, actually, we're not sure that we're getting a fair deal in relation to the men on board, was happening in the United States, New Zealand. All these air hostesses took their companies to court on the basis of discrimination. Or many, you know, there were many instances where, these air hostesses decided they'd had enough.
There are some really amazing photos and advertisements from the period. What does it tell us about Australian women in society and the economy?
I think the airlines were a big deal, particularly if you think of Qantas. There was this sort of, Qantas was very much about taking Australia to the rest of the world. So the air hostess became a ambassadress in a way. You know, she represented the country. And certainly going back to, you know, my earlier work with the uniforms, the uniforms were often, signified something of Australianness. Like in the 80s, there was a uniform that was done by Yves Saint Laurent, the French designer, and it was covered in kangaroo. So there was the idea that you represented the airline. I mean, the air hostess was the face of the airline, and she was certainly used in advertising campaigns. Sometimes not all that flattering. I mean, they sexualized the air hostess, you know, certainly, and it was easy to do in the fact that they had a policy of keeping them young, and, their grooming made them very attractive. You know, they were all very beautifully groomed. Their uniforms were often, you know, bespoke, so they had very nicely fitted uniforms. So there was they used the air hostess and as a point of difference, because that was the other thing, that through the 1960s and 70s, they were all flying, all airlines were flying much the same airlines. So you actually had to work out a way of creating difference, and the air hostess tended to be that point of difference, or that's how the airlines portrayed them. So yeah, there were some very controversial campaigns, not so much in Australia, but in America. You know, they had campaigns that, you know, would say things like, "I'm Cheryl, come fly me," or just totally inappropriate, and also making it uncomfortable for the single young women on board, because the airlines were promoting them as being available when they certainly weren't in many, many instances.
How did, the expectations of air travelers change in the 1950s? And then how did the air hostesses respond?
I don't know. I think passengers, all I can think as you ask that question is what is happening now in relation to airlines. Certainly certainly in the 1950s, you know, passengers, it was kind of pretty much first class all the way. So passengers were looked after. There were the ratio of crew to, like, if you think of the jets, which came in the late 1950s, there are only about 100 seats on there. So, you know, you have crews that can actually sit on the end of the seat and chat to them and look after them. And it was still a very pretty expensive. It wasn't until, you know, you have the jumbo jets in the 1970s. Air travel was still very expensive, so you were moneyed class, and you expected a certain sort of service. And so I think certainly in the 1950s you were really feted and looked after. And the food, I mean, you know, you get lobster thermidor on a plate. You know, the food was absolutely phenomenal. You know, if you look at they would have cocktail lists. You know, you could get a daiquiri or whatever. So the whole idea of service, it was first class. It was absolutely first class. And it wasn't until, as I say, you get those bigger jumbo jets and you suddenly get, you know, 300, 400 people. And, you know, it was described at the time as having like a town in the sky. You know, you have this, like a small town moving into a plane, and you suddenly have to accommodate hundreds of people, and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work in the way the numbers in the, you know, the earlier planes were. Actually, I just launched the book on board a 747 on the weekend. It was a aviation heritage museum down south, and you walk in there, and when they're empty, you get the sense they're absolutely huge. Yeah, they're, you can't imagine how these planes get up in the sky.
That sounds really fun. Your final chapter is called Goodbye Hostesses, Hello Flight Attendants. How did things kind of come to a head in the late 1970s, 1980s?
I think possibly in America started where you got, the Civil Rights Act and Chapter 7, where you suddenly are told you actually can't discriminate on the basis of sex, race, age, and all the other factors. And this kind of ricocheted around the world. And flight hostesses in America were the first people to go to the courts on the basis of this sort of discrimination. And it followed across, certainly New Zealand did the same. And in Australia, we had, in particular, I can think of one dispute in the 1980s where Qantas flight hostesses had felt that they weren't being given the promotion opportunities that the male stewards were being offered. They'd all signed contracts to retire when they were 35, which 10 years before they thought, as if we're going to be doing this job for 10 years. But, 10 years passes quickly and they liked the job. And then they thought, why on earth were we made to sign these contracts? So they took Qantas to court, and it was a very long, hard-fought battle, and Qantas kept coming back at them. And if you imagine a group of women taking on a airline, I mean, they would sit around a lounge room, pooling $100 notes for their legal teams. It was really tough. But the thing, and I've talked to them for the book, that they knew they were right. They knew they'd been discriminated against, and the fact they knew that they were right, they just kept going. They thought, no, this airline is discriminated, and they're wrong. And after 8 years, and one of the women I spoke to had 2 children within that period of the dispute. But anyway, they got their jobs back. They were reinstated with promotion. This also created issues within the flight deck, because the people who'd been working for 8 years were quite resentful of these women who'd actually been reinstated. So it was hard fought battle, not only with the airlines, but even when these women came back, it wasn't always pleasant on board the flight. And this, once again, just going back to the notion of there's often a stereotype around an air hostess, being just a kind of glamour puss, but I think they were always unionized from the 1950s, and they were, I think, because they gave up a lot for the job, they wanted the best out of the job too. So in that sense, they were driven in terms of their conditions, and they were, they were closed shop. They were highly unionized, and they were pretty feisty women in lots of ways.
That's right. Thanks so much for joining us today, Prue. That's Prudence Black. She's talked about her new book, Smile, Particularly in Bad Weather, The Era of the Australian Airline Hostess. The book is published in April 2017 by the University of Western Australia Press. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.